Welcome back to our study of Mark. We are in chapter 14, and we have just finished reading verses 1 through 6, and specifically we'd spent some time talking about the anointing that Jesus received in Bethany. And just to refresh your memory, in verse 3 we find out that when Jesus was reclining at a table, a woman with an alabaster jar of very expensive oil came and poured that oil on Jesus' head. And I mentioned to you right before the break that Judas criticized this lady for doing this because he was looking at the dollar signs of what that oil was worth. And I told you to take a look in John chapter 12, verse 6, and you find out there that he was criticizing her for this because he wanted the money. He was stealing from the money pot, if you will. And so when we look at verse 6, we're going to see Jesus' response to what Judas had said. Jesus said, "Leave her alone. Why are you bothering her? She has done a noble thing for me. You always have the poor with you, and you can do what is good for them whenever you want. But you do not always have me. She has done what she could. She has anointed my body in advance for burial. I assure you, wherever the gospel is proclaimed in the whole world, what this woman has done will also be told in memory of her." Now, I think about Jesus' response. You know he knew that Judas was stealing from the money pot. Of course he knew. Of course he knew that Judas was going to be the one that betrayed him. Of course he knew. But isn't it interesting how he responded? You're always going to have the poor with you. I want you to think about how you would respond if you had that information, if you knew Judas was the one stealing. I mean, my natural inclination would be, I know exactly what you want to do with that money. Stop being so greedy. But he reminded them of a scripture. You can find that in Deuteronomy chapter 15. And he brought it. Isn't it amazing what mercy the Lord shows us? And to me, that's what that response was. It was merciful. You're always going to have the poor with you. Yes, it's good to do good for them, but you're not always going to have me. And what she did, she's anointed my body in advance for my burial. So again here, he's predicting his death. He's telling them, this is what's coming. And don't you love how he ended this? The last thing he said about this matter was that wherever the gospel is proclaimed in the whole wide world, that this woman, what she has done will be told in memory. And didn't we just give a memorial to her just now by speaking it? Isn't that amazing? This word that's going to live on forever. This woman's, her act will be memorialized forever. And what a selfless act it was. And look at verse 10. Right on the heels of that, the word tells us, "Then Judas Iscariot, one of the 12, went to the chief priests to hand him over to them." He was ready to betray him. That was it. And when they heard this, they were glad and promised to give him silver. I'm sure they were glad. You think about tactics of war and defeating the enemy. Don't you want to get into the enemy's camp? Isn't that where you want to go? Isn't that how you're going to defeat them the easiest? And so I'm sure these religious leaders were, hey, fantastic. He's in the inner circle. And isn't that funny? That's just right what Judas... So easy to be bought off. So he started looking for a good opportunity to betray him. Now I know that this had to happen and this betrayal had to happen, and it was for our benefit that this betrayal happened. I, for one, am a benefactor of it. But have you ever stopped and thought about Judas and thought, he traveled with Jesus? He was privy to all of those miracles and all of the teaching, to the point where if everything that Jesus had done had been recorded, there would be too many books to even contain it. That he was privy to all that. And yet the greed and the hardness of heart, he was willing to betray him. Now, I can't understand that, and quite frankly, I'm glad that I can't. When we look at verse 12, on the first day of unleavened bread, when they sacrificed the Passover lamb, his disciples asked him, "Where do you want us to go and prepare the Passover so you may eat it?" So he sent two of his disciples and told them, "Go into the city, and a man carrying a water jug will meet you. Follow him. Wherever he enters, tell the owner of the house, 'The teacher says, where is the guest room for me to eat the Passover with my disciples?' He will show you a large room upstairs, furnished and ready. Make the preparations for us there." So the disciples went out, entered the city, and found it just as he had told them. And they prepared the Passover. Doesn't this sound like vaguely familiar? Remember when we read about the donkey? Now we know, if you look in Luke, that the two disciples that he told to go into the city were Peter and John. But you think about, we had this discussion, I believe it was last session, about the faith that required. Hearing the word of Jesus, give direction, and just move on that. I don't know about you, but I don't know that I'd feel real good about going and saying, "Hey, is the room, can we have the, you know, we're going to need." But such faith, Jesus had said, this is what's going to happen. And that's exactly what they did. And they found it exactly the way Jesus had told them it would be. And so when evening came, he arrived with the 12. Now, when you think about Passover, you can learn more about Passover by looking in Leviticus. And evening is important because that's when the Passover began. And you can, I have a little note in my Bible, Leviticus 23:5, and you can take a look at that, and it specifies the time of Passover. While they were reclining and eating, Jesus said, "I assure you, one of you will betray me. One who is eating with me." Now we know who that is. They began to be distressed and to say to him one by one, surely not I. Now, I want you to think about this, and I hope that when you read these scriptures that you try to put yourself in the setting. And I do this often, and I reflect and ask myself, well, how would I act? I'm sure I'd be right there with them saying, no, not me. But you think about, even when we go back and we look at the Word and we look at all the lessons that we can learn from reading the Old Testament and following Israel, and how the Lord would lead them into a land and the supernaturally conquer an area. And it was a supernatural victory. And they had been given instruction, don't worship any other gods. And automatically, what would they do? They'd start cohabitating with the people and start worshiping the gods. And have you ever read that before and thought, I wouldn't do that? But we have to be careful. By the grace of God, we wouldn't do that. And so, by the grace of God, we have the conviction and the wherewithal to stand for the Lord. By the grace of God, we have the power, because of His power within us, to withstand the persecution that comes because of the Word's sake, because of Jesus. And so I try to remind myself of this. We can't be too hard on them, because by the grace of God, it could have been us. And so Jesus said, it is one of the 12, the one who is dipping bread with me in the bowl. For the Son of Man will go just as it is written about him. But woe to that man by whom the Son of Man is betrayed. It would have been better for that man if he had not been born. Now, what an indictment. As they were eating, he took bread, blessed and broke it, and gave it to them, and said, take it. This is my body. Then he took a cup, and after giving thanks, he gave it to them, and so they all drank from it. He said to them, this is my blood that establishes the covenant. It is shed for many. I assure you, I will no longer drink of the fruit of the vine until that day when I drink it in a new way in the kingdom of God. After singing psalms, they went out to the Mount of Olives. Now let's talk about this, because I have this little heading in my Bible that says the first Lord's Supper. Let's talk about this. This is my body. How were they receiving that? How do we receive that when we take communion? It's by faith, right? And so, you take in my body by faith. And we know the promise is that when we do that, we're identifying with Him, right? In remembrance of Him. And then he goes on to say, you take this cup now let's give thanks for it. He gave thanks, and then they drank from him. He said, now this is my blood, and this is what establishes the covenant, the new covenant. You drink this now. There's a lot of important things to say about blood. And I know that we can learn a lot from that when we about blood when we look in the Old Testament. We know that life is in the blood, number one. You find that in Leviticus in chapter 17. But this was so, Jesus, if you'll remember, had told his disciples this earlier. And it was to the point where, and we find this in Luke in chapter 6, that it repelled some of his disciples to the point where they turned around and left. Actually, it's in Luke chapter 6, verse 66. It's kind of interesting, isn't it? Flip with me to Luke chapter 6. And let's just read that. It's not Luke. Help me. Is it John? I think it might be John. Yeah, John. Sorry about that. And John. And he said, from that moment, Jesus had said, this is what's going to happen. From that moment, many of his disciples turned back and no longer accompanied him. Because that was so foreign to them. They were thinking naturally, not spiritually. And so when we think about this Lord's Supper, it's an act of faith by the Spirit where we accept Jesus' body into ours and his blood. And because of his blood, we have life everlasting, the new covenant. And Jesus says, he goes on and tells them when we look in verse 25, this is the last time I'm going to be drinking naturally with you. That I'm not going to do this again until I do it in a new way when I return. Now, we move on to verse 27. And Jesus keeps telling them what's going to happen. He's predicting. He said to them, all of you will run away because it is written, I will strike the shepherd and the sheep will be scattered. We've had a discussion about this before class started this evening. You find that in Zechariah chapter 13. I will strike the shepherd and the sheep will be scattered. Well, when you keep reading and we find out what happens with Jesus' betrayal, that's exactly what happened. The sheep scattered. They ran for self-preservation, if you will. They were worried about their own hide. And Jesus goes on in verse 28 and says, but after I have been resurrected or raised, I will go ahead of you to Galilee. Now that's important because when we find out after he's resurrected, do you remember the disciples had forgotten all about that? And Peter told him, even if everyone runs away, I will certainly not. And Jesus said, I assure you, today, this very night, before the rooster crows twice, you will deny me three times. But he kept insisting, if I have to die with you, I will never deny you. And they all said the same thing. Now, I'm so grateful for these different accounts because in Mark here, it gives us a little bit more specifics, and it tells us here that Peter, that the rooster will crow three times, that he'll deny him three times. And so that's a little bit more detail than you find in the other Gospels. But again, these disciples were so sure that they would not deny Jesus, that they would stand with him. And I think about, we're getting ready to read about the prayer. And do you remember how they kept falling asleep? To me, this is the same thing Jesus said pretty much, your spirit's willing, but your flesh is weak. It's the same thing here as far as the denying Jesus, from my perspective. That their spirit wanted to stand with him, their spirit, but when it got right down to it, the flesh was weak because the flesh was worried about self-preservation. The flesh didn't want to be persecuted in the same way Jesus was going to be persecuted. But now you think about what we would say to one another. And I put this back on me, and I hope that you're doing the same for you. When it gets right down to it and the persecution comes, am I willing to stand up for Jesus? And in my own little life, persecution has come. It's come to me in probably a different manner than it comes to you. But it's persecution nonetheless. And what I find amazing is the ones that persecute are oftentimes the ones closest to you. And you know what they say about the ones closest to you can do the most damage and the most hurt. But these disciples were insistent, no, we're standing with you, we're not going to deny you, no. Jesus said, yeah, you will. You know, when you think about it, though, all of the word had to be fulfilled, all of it. So even the shepherd, even the striking of the shepherd and the sheep scattering, that had to be fulfilled too, didn't it? Now let's talk about the garden. In verse 32, then they came to a place named Gethsemane, and he told his disciples, sit here while I pray. He took Peter, James, and John with him. And he began to be deeply distressed and horrified. It's really that word horrified is, when you look at the original translation, it's a fright, it's afraid. And Jesus said to them, he said to them, my soul is swallowed up in sorrow to the point of death. Remain here and stay awake. Remain here and watch. Why did he need them to watch? He knew he was going to be betrayed. He knew the betrayer was coming. Then he went a little farther, fell to the ground and began to pray that if it were possible, the hour might pass from him. And he said, Abba, Father, all things are possible for you. Take this cup away from me. Nevertheless, not what I will, but what you will. You think about the power of those words. Father, all things are possible. You can do anything. You can take this away from me. Nevertheless, not what I will, but what you will. You know, he asked that three times. Then he came and found them sleeping. Simon, are you sleeping? He asked Peter, couldn't you stay awake 1 hour? Stay awake and pray so that you won't enter into temptation. The spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak. He's saying, I know your spirit wants to, but your body's not in line. Your flesh isn't in alignment with your spirit. Once again, he went away and prayed the same thing. And he came again and found them sleeping because they could not keep their eyes open. They didn't know what to say to him. I imagine not. Then he came a third time and said to them, are you still sleeping and resting? Still? Enough. The time has come. Look, the Son of Man is being betrayed into the hands of sinners. Get up. Let's go. See, my betrayer is near. Now, I want to go back to this, verse 36. All things are possible for you to take this cup away from me. Nevertheless, not what I will, but what you will. Now, you remember, and this is hard for my natural mind, to be quite frank with you. Jesus was in a physical body just like we're in. And he was getting his soul, his spirit, aligned to get that body under subjection to do what needed to be done. He knew what was coming. He knew. You think about the love that he had to have for not only the Father, to fulfill the will of the Father, but the love for us to do this, to be in such agony. I can't even with my natural mind comprehend it. I don't know about you, but it's too much to even imagine. To know what was coming, but being willing to fulfill the will of the Father. Nevertheless, not what I will, but what you will. How many times do we say that to the Father? I really don't want to do that, Lord. Nevertheless, not what I will, but what you will. You know, we talk about learning the ways of the Lord. Well, this is one of the ways, isn't it? That you always obey the Father, regardless of the circumstances. How does that apply for your life? How does that apply for my life? We've been put in difficult situations before, all of us have, but none of us have been put in this situation. Nevertheless, not what I will, but what you will. Let those words of Jesus ring in your heart. this evening. Let those echo around in your heart. And when you get to that point, I would imagine the boldness of the Spirit leads you in the direction that you need to go. Because Jesus, look what he did. He stood up and he said, okay, the time is near. Time is at hand. Getting ready to be betrayed. It's time to go. And while he was speaking, Judas, one of the 12, suddenly arrived. With him was a mob with swords and clubs from the chief priests, the scribes, and the elders. His betrayer had given them a signal. The one I kiss, he said. He's the one. Arrest him and take him away under guard. Now you think about that, and I know we've talked about this before, but the intimacy of a kiss and the betrayal of a friend. If you've ever been betrayed by somebody close to you, you can have just a little inkling. Verse 45. So when he came, he went right up to him and said, Rabbi, and kissed him. Called him his master. Now you think about that. My master. It's too much to understand, isn't it? The one that you're calling master, the one that I'm saying I serve. Then they took hold of him and arrested him. And one of those who stood by drew his sword and struck the high priest's slave and cut off his ear. Now we know in the other gospel that was Malchus's ear. And look how Jesus responds. Have you come out with swords and clubs as though I were a criminal to capture me? Every day I was among you teaching in the temple complex and you didn't arrest me. But the scriptures must be fulfilled. The word had to be fulfilled. Then they all deserted him and ran away. The sheep scattered. Now we know if you read the other accounts that Jesus healed Malchus's ear, touched his ear and healed him. What mercy and grace for the ones that were capturing him to take him in to be beaten, and he knew all that was going to happen. But let me heal you first. Now a certain young man having a linen cloth wrapped around his naked body was following him. They caught hold of him, but he left the linen cloth behind and ran away naked. Now we can speculate and guess as to who that is, but the word doesn't tell us specifically. They led Jesus away to the high priest, and all the chief priests, the elders, and the scribes convened. Peter followed him at a distance, right into the high priest's courtyard. He was sitting with the temple police, warming himself by the fire. Now that tells us it had to be chilly, at least, at the very least. The chief priest and the whole Sanhedrin were looking for testimony against Jesus to put him to death, but they could find none. For many were giving false testimony about him. But the testimonies did not agree. Some stood up and were giving false testimonies against him, stating, "We heard him say, 'I will demolish the sanctuary made by human hands, and in 3 days I will build another, not made by hands.' Yet their testimony did not agree even on this." Isn't that amazing? They were trying to get people to lie, and they couldn't even get their story straight that they were lying about. And we know that when we go back and read this, he was talking about his own body. But there again, can't be too hard on him, because that had to be, he was speaking spiritually, and they were thinking naturally. So we're going to stop right here, and we're going to, when we come back together, we're going to talk about how the priest, the high priest, treated him and what all Jesus went through for you and for me. Now, before we wrap up this evening, I want to say just a few things to you. First of all,